Hey everybody, this is Alex Merced from alexmercedcoder.com, and you are listening to Web Dev 101. And today's episode, I want to do is go over like conceptually the basics of computer science. So I'm not going to go into like the nit and grit of how like different things work, but like sort of like what is this body of knowledge and why do you care? Okay, because I'm assuming that if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably an aspiring developer or a developer early on in their career. That's kind of who a lot of this episode, a lot of this content is kind of geared towards. But computer science is essentially a body of work. It's all about how computers work. Makes sense. Now, why does it matter if you're a programmer? Okay. At first, it seems like it doesn't. Okay. You just need to know how, like, the program, and you're probably more interested in thinking about, like, how does the browser work and things like the DOM, which is true. But eventually you start kind of hitting limits to what you can do. That's not a factor of, hey, you don't know the programming language. It's just a limitation because of your understanding of the platform. Okay, not just the browser itself, but the machine that the browser is running in, and how that machine is put together. So really kind of understand how all these pieces are kind of like fitting together. And understanding that can allow you to write programs that are not only do what they're supposed to do, but can do them efficiently. But also you can create ideas and solve problems that haven't been addressed yet or haven't been thought of yet. Okay, so that's sort of one. So basically the basic idea of just like understanding like what is the difference between like a memory and a processor and a hard drive. And to kind of just kind of go over that real quick, you know, think of your processor as kind of like the brain that does the thinking. Okay, so basically, like, you have a brain that kind of goes through every thought. Okay, the problem is, like, you're not going to hold all the information in you forever. You know, you need somewhere to store the things you're thinking about at the moment. And that's what your memory is. Your in this case, the RAM in your computer. So what it does, it's kind of like a working dashboard for the processors. Whatever the processor is processing, before it can process it, it's got to be stored somewhere where it can reach it, and ideally it's somewhere it can reach it quickly. So if you actually take a look at the physical layout, like the motherboard of your computer, there's like the processor chip, and usually not too far are the sticks of RAM. Okay, and basically the way RAM works is going to be different than the way, like, let's say your hard drive traditionally works. Okay, and essentially everything is really just electricity at the end of the day. So this is where we get the whole like zeros and ones and binary and all that stuff. So essentially, your processor can really only, all it's doing is just processing a huge sequence of little semiconductors, which are either on or off. They're either conducting electricity or they're not conducting electricity. And essentially, anytime they're conducting electricity, it's treated as a one, and when they're not, it's treated as a zero. So ones and zeros, binary. Okay, so everything has to be represented in a sequence of zeros and ones, and essentially. So basically, what happens is that your processor is reading this like sequence of, you know, basically on and off switches, which is binary. And then, but the problem is it only has so much room to store what it's thinking about in that moment, because usually like the processor has like a little cache where it can store some information. So generally, like when you open up a piece of software, so when I open up Zoom, let's say, I have Zoom installed and it's saved on my hard drive. But for me to actually run the program gets loaded into the memory. And then that's where the processor is processing it from, because it can get to it a lot quicker. Okay, but generally you have a lot more limited memory than you do hard drive space. So you might have like a terabyte hard drive, but let's say like 64 gigs of memory. But the idea is the more memory you have, the more things the processor can have saved nearby to process. Okay, basically if you run out of space, then you can only have what you have in there, and then you have to wait to process that first, and then go back to the hard drive to get more, which is a much more lengthy process. So this is when you start seeing like computers really sort of slow down when you have too many things open. Okay, then is your hard drive. Your hard drive traditionally is essentially a spinning disk of tape. Okay, so essentially like if you need to write or get some information, you have to wait till it spins all the way around to get to that spot again. So it was a lot slower, and plus it was a lot physically further, a lot harder to read. So generally, like, the hard drive itself, while it can store lots of information, isn't the place where you can get information to quickly. So that's why you need memory. So you can load the information to somewhere quicker, so that way the processor can process it faster. Nowadays, you have like solid state hard drives, which are a lot faster, and they work more like the RAM does, where essentially instead of having the spinning tape, you just have these sort of like constant on and off switches that are holding onto the information. So it's essentially like a really like long, persistent RAM stick. Okay, this when you think of solid state drives. So basically, you have a bunch of different possible like little zero. Oh, you have all those little electrical charges being sort of frozen into place. Cool. So that's sort of the physical layout, okay, of the computer. Now, every computer's processor again is the one that's processing all the instructions. And essentially, that usually has something called assembly. And I think we've already talked about assembly in the WebAssembly episode, so I'm not going to go too deep into how that works. I do recommend going to watch the WebAssembly episode because it's a good episode and it's important information that you should check out. But the idea is that the processor will use assembly to generally make it easier for people to write programs for that processor. And then people create programming languages like C++ that can compile to that assembly. And then people create languages that then compile to C++. And you start getting higher and higher level languages. Each one's just trying to make something simpler than the previous level. These are called abstractions. So abstractions is when you take something that exists, so in this case, binary. We want to do something that's a little bit simpler than a bunch of zeros and ones. So they created an abstraction that's called assembly language. But assembly language is still pretty hard to read, so they created an abstraction on top of that, which is your general lower level languages. These are your Rusts, your C++, your Goes, which are more sort of like an abstraction on top of assembly. Then you have your higher level languages, which are generally like essentially they were built by using a low level language like C++, but generally like a lot of the work's been done for you. So these are like your Pythons, your JavaScripts, your Rubies, your PHPs, where it's just a lot of things that you would have to do in C++, Rust, and Go. You just don't have to think about in those languages. Things like typing, memory allocation, these things you just don't have to worry about. Okay, so just to kind of put the programming languages into different categories. But at the end of the day, under the hood, whatever language you're running in, again, memory has to be allocated. And this is kind of one of the most important considerations. This is when we start talking about like time and space complexity, and you hear people talk about like big O notation. And the basic idea is this. The more space you take up, meaning the more memory you use, because you declare a lot more variables, you use up more space and memory. Eventually, you use up all the memory, and that's going to slow down the program. Okay, but then there's also time complexity, which generally just means more instructions. So the more steps your program has to do, the longer it's going to take. And then, of course, that means it would be slow. Now, usually you can save time, okay, by using up more memory. Okay, so instead of like transforming the same variable over and over again, you create many variables that you can then go back to and use and do all sorts of things. Okay, so oftentimes there's a trade-off between sort of time and space. Okay, I can generally like trim down time and reduce the amount of steps I have to take by oftentimes using a lot more like caching techniques where basically I save stuff for later. But again, I'm saving more stuff in memory and that's going to end up taking longer. Vice versa, I can oftentimes save more memory by essentially reusing things and modifying things, but oftentimes in that case, there's a lot more steps in the process. And I might have to go back and repeat steps because something I had before is no longer there. So it's more space efficient, but less time efficient. So this is constantly the struggle. And that's what big O notation is oftentimes trying to capture, basically based on what the complexity of your program, depending on like the steps that your program takes. If we have to process additional information, how much longer is that going to take? So that's essentially the general concept of Big O. If you head over to devnursery.com, I do have a computer science playlist where I do have a video where I go over Big O notation and more in depth, and a lot of these things more in depth. So that's like the thing with like Big O. We care about like, hey, I'm writing this thing, and for example, if you're writing a program that does several steps or like that compares one each item to every item in the array. Well, if I have three items, then I'm comparing each thing to two other things. But if I have 10 items in the array, I now have to compare each thing to 9 other items. So basically, as I add more items to the steps, I'm exponentially adding the amount of steps, the actual algorithm, which just means like the code, my procedure of how I do things is going to take. So again, these are things to consider. Now, when it comes to not just how much memory and whatnot, there's also the speed of access of data. Okay, this is where we get into something called data structures. Okay, so for example, if I have just one big array, one big list of items, like numbers 1 through 10, okay, what's going to happen is that to get to 10, I have to go through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay, so there's a longer process. The more numbers I have in there, the longer it's going to take for me to get to those last numbers. But there's other ways of structuring your data, things like a binary tree, where basically, instead of having your data just being like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9, 10, you actually may have like 5 at the top. And then below 5 is like 4 and 6. And then below 4 is like, 2 and 3, and then so forth. And you have basically imagined like a tree. And because of this, if I always start from like, if I'm looking for the number 1, I can just be like, is number 1 bigger or smaller than 5? Well, it's smaller, so it's going to go down to 4. And then it's going to be like, is it smaller or bigger than 4? And basically, it might take 3 steps, but that's a lot better than going from like 1 to 10. There's like no number that's going to take me 9 steps to get to. Okay, so different data structures will allow you to access your data quicker depending on the kind of data you have, which will allow your program to be able to work faster. When you work talking about working with, hundreds of thousands, millions, billions unique points of data, the way you structure your data can make a huge difference in how quickly you can access it, particularly if you're working with databases. So generally, if you're working with like databases, you're gonna really, or anytime where you have to save data for later, you're gonna really care about data structures because you're gonna care about like how do I store that data? When I bring it back, how quickly can I access it? Now, what happens is that oftentimes a lot of problems can be solved using the same techniques. Okay, you don't have to constantly reinvent the wheel. And this is where you start looking into sort of like algorithms and design patterns. So design patterns are just sort of like tried and true ways of using object-oriented programming to solve problems. Okay, so the idea is like, okay, and they generally fall into one of three categories, which I want to say it's there's creational design patterns, which generally like these are like deal with like how do you create your objects and their techniques for creating objects. Then there's behavioral patterns, which have to do with being able to modify or alter the behavior of an object. And then there is structural. And then what's the difference between structural and behavioral? So behavior changes behavior. Structural, basically, I think it's about like dealing with the structure of. So if I have a feeling adapter, the adapter pattern is in this category. And with the and just to kind of give you an example of what I mean by structural. So the idea with like the adapter pattern is that you have, for example, in real life, you might you we use we implement all these patterns. They're just code versions of things we do in real life. So the adapter pattern, for example, if I go to Europe, they have different outlets. But I'm not gonna go sit there and go buy a whole new computer that uses that different kind of outlet and its charger. So what do I do instead? I buy an adapter piece. Okay, so my laptop's charger still takes the same sort of US type outlet. And that outlet in the wall is still the same thing, but the adapter helps translate one to the other. So the adapter pattern is where you have like two objects that need to communicate with each other, but the way they are out of the gate can't communicate with each other. They're not designed to communicate with each other. So what you do is you create some sort of intermediate object to act as an adapter to help communicate. So you're dealing with structural issues. So I think that's for definite. So basic creational, structural, behavioral. So you have these three categories of design patterns. There's a famous book on these patterns called The Gang of Four book. Well, that's the nickname for the book because it was four authors who wrote it. It's like I think called like Design Pattern, Object-Oriented Design Patterns. It has some really sort of plain vanilla title, but if you Google Gang of Four book, you'll find it. Okay, but that's why you care about design patterns because they give you these techniques that you can just, instead of having to like reinvent the wheel, you'll know like, okay, when I'm in a situation like this, okay, I can make an adapter. Okay, if I just need like a Swiss Army knife, just something like an object with a bunch of functions that help me around, I might create a singleton, which is just like one object with a bunch of functions that help me throughout my program. things like a proxy, where instead of, you know, me creating a new object, what I do is I clone an existing object, so that way I have all the benefits of what's already created. There's all these, again, these different design patterns. Then there is, again, algorithms, which can fall into, like, you hear a lot about, like, search algorithms and sorting algorithms. And the reason being there's so much focus on this is because a lot of what's done in most programs are either you're sorting data. Okay, you have a lot of data and you kind of need to sort it. Okay, because being able to sort your data can actually make it easier to find data as well. And sometimes people just want to sort their data. So how do you take a bunch of pieces of information? Because the computer doesn't know what sorting and search means. It just knows what you told it to do. So how can I sit there and say, okay, do this with the first thing, do that with the second thing, do it in a way that's going to be quick. And basically learning the different sorting algorithms will have different benefits, pros and cons. And that's an important thing to understand, because you run into different situations where those sorting techniques could be really useful and help really kind of make your program more efficient. And then the search algorithm, same thing. You have a huge amount of data and you need to find this little like needle in the haystack. If you use the most inefficient method way of doing it, you're going to end up, you know, taking a lot longer. Imagine like if every Google search took like 30 minutes when you're searching literally across the whole world wide web. Okay, there's a lot of thought of not only how to hold the data and how to kind of like crawl that data to kind of determine which should be the best results, but also how to hold that data and be able to access it quickly. So that way we can have things like Google that allows us to access pretty much the entire web, you know, pretty quickly. And that's all done through a really deep understanding of things like data structures and algorithms and design patterns. Okay, especially when you start getting to those levels of like your Googles and your Facebooks, where you have a tremendous amount of data, you have a tremendous amount of, you know, stuff that happens at the same time. So you really need to optimize. So hopefully this gives you an idea of like, why do you care about computer science? Again, you can go to devnursery.com and there's a computer science playlist. You can also find the same playlist over there at grokoverflow.com. But hopefully this kind of like paints that picture and gets you to go, you know, crack open some books and start learning some design patterns and some sorting algorithms and really appreciating why like that's important. So my name is Alex Merced from alexmercedcoder.com. Have a great day and enjoy.